many countries in Africa with very limited supply of energy and therefore very limited consumption of energy. They are sitting in the middle of the equator and they have guaranteed sun. It might not be at night, but it's already much better than whatever reliability they might be getting before.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. In low-income countries, electricity is still mostly generated from fossil fuels. So how quickly can that change? In our latest episode examining the policy implications of topics that we're discussing on the BREAD IGC Virtual PhD course in Environmental Economics, we're going to be discussing renewables, where innovation comes from, and how it can be applied in low-income countries. John Van Rienen of the London School of Economics, Ma Regwant of ICREA and Northwestern gave the lectures. When I caught up with them afterwards, I started by asking John which sources of energy actually count as renewable.
What a renewable is basically energy which is derived from natural resources that are replenished at a higher rate than they're consumed. If you think about renewable energy, think about from hydroelectric dams, winds, you know, onshore and offshore, solar from the sun, geothermal, ocean, there's a whole bunch of them. But the big three are kind of hydro, wind and solar. Nuclear is an interesting one. Nuclear doesn't count as a renewable because it does use stuff up. But of course, when we're thinking about the transition to clean energy, nuclear is actually pretty clean, although some people might disagree with that. I think my view is that you really should think about nuclear as part of the energy transition, but it's not strictly speaking a renewable. A non-renewable, of course, is something like oil that you have to pump out of the ground, and once it's gone, it's gone. Gas,
yes.
Coal. The dirtiest of the fossil fuels.
If we're talking about large-scale adoption in a development context, are solar and wind really the only games in town, or are there other sources for renewable power?
So wind and solar will experience the largest growth for sure, especially solar, I would say. But depending on specific country context, you could see hydro playing a role or other technologies. But definitely, I would say solar is the one that we will see the largest growth in.
So how much of electricity is generated by renewable sources?
So it varies a lot around the world. But in total, as from the latest data that I've seen in 2019, is about a quarter of all electricity in the world is generated from renewables. But it varies a lot in different countries. I think in the UK, the numbers are around about 35 to 40%. In some countries like Paraguay, it's close to 100%. But in many other countries, Russia, for example, is much, much lower than that.
We know the cost of wind and solar has fallen. How dramatic has that falling cost been?
It's been quite dramatic. In the last 10 to 15 years, the cost of solar have gone down by at least 75%. Gosh. So that basically costs a fourth of what it would cost 10 years ago or so.
Wow.
Wind was already cheaper. It has continued to improve and the cost have fallen down, but not as dramatically. They have fallen down by about a third. So both technologies at the moment, solar and wind, are very competitive with fossil fuels in a majority of countries.
It's easy to get depressed when you think about climate change. But the good news story is what's happened to solar power. So, you know, in the mid-1970s, it cost about $100 per watt of energy. Today, it's around about 25 cents in 2019 US dollars. So why does anybody invest in fossil fuels given this? Well, partly, I think it's because of the fact that most energy is still generated from fossil fuels. And although we are in the transition to a green economy, that's not happening nearly as fast as many people would like or that we need to do. So there is still going to be a significant amount of fossil fuels used over the next few years. There's a lot of uncertainty over what policies are going to be used or how quick that's going to be. So there will, in the transition to a green economy, be some role for fossil fuels and therefore some incentive to do things about them.
You we often hear that there are plenty of renewable sources of electricity to generate electricity, but they are not contributing at the moment. Who gets to decide whether renewable sources are actually used to provide power? How do they decide this?
Again, it very depends a lot on what country you're talking about or which sector you're talking about. Governments have a huge influence on this. If you think about the big way that, say, electricity is produced is in power plants. And in most countries, governments have a huge influence on, you know, which power plants are built and how they're built and what they use. But in also many countries, it's a lot of, you know, private sector investment. So private investors, when they invest in different types of power plants, they're thinking about what their return is likely to be, what the price they're going to get for the renewable or non-renewable energy they produce is. So there's a lot of private sector agents. But the big chunk of it, really, if you think about it, is going to be power plants, and that's heavily influenced by kind of what governments decide.
If I'm a policymaker in a developing or an emerging economy and I want to increase the use of renewables to be more like Paraguay, that John mentioned, for example, what challenges do I face?
Well, one of the challenges is to justify the cost of the investment. Renewables have only capital costs and their marginal cost is really low. Mm-hmm. So it means that upfront, it will cost more money. So financing might be a bit of an issue, even though it's definitely for many, many countries the most favorable energy source from an economic point of view. Another challenge could be technology transfer. So if we deploy solar or we deploy wind in a country that has never deployed them before, are we doing the best design? Are we getting the maximal efficiency that we could? Or are we getting a subpar installation that's not delivering all the promised benefits? So I think those might be the two biggest challenges that these countries might face.
There is this problem of intermittency, isn't there, with solar or wind. Is solving this problem possible in low-income countries? Because I know from previous Vox Dev talks that we've done that intermittent power supply, even using fossil fuel generation, is a problem in these economies already.
Yes, so that's why I think we need to look at it from a developing perspective, point of view. Like if I think about us, we might think of renewables as intermittent, but for many of these countries, renewables are much less intermittent than whatever they are getting now. So imagine many countries in Africa with very limited supply of energy and therefore very limited consumption of energy. They are sitting in the middle of the equator and they have guaranteed sun. It might not be at night, but it's already much better than whatever reliability they might be getting before. So I think here it might be intermittent, but it will be a much more reliable, secure source of power than many of these countries are now experiencing. Additionally, the cost of batteries are following the same cost curve, and eventually batteries will solve the problem. But I do think that even without batteries, a lower cost solution that is somewhat intermittent can already provide higher quality of power in some of these countries. Yes.
We're learning what a constraint the transmission grid is in many cases, and where those grids exist, they were built for fossil fuel power. What are the challenges when it comes to upgrading the grid?
Yeah, it's a big challenge, both in developed and developing countries, although the nature of the challenge might be slightly different. So in OECD countries, let's say, we have a large stranded asset, which is this big grid that, as you said, might not be best designed for renewables. And that combines with a not in my backyard problem that is very large in some countries. So it's difficult to change the grid. What people are exploring in these countries is more expensive technologies like underwater cables that make the not in my backyard problem easier and that can circumvent a lot of the topology of the existing grid, as well as something that's called capacitors that will change the topology of the existing grid. So you can, with some gadgets, make the grid much more flexible than it used to be. And that will be the more technological, expensive solution for OECD-like countries. For developing countries, I think they do have a big opportunity to leapfrog many of the things that we have done. And they might be designing their grids already in a much more flexible way. And for example, in remote areas, rural areas, I'm not sure a huge grid will be the solution there. So I do think there is much more room for innovation in developing countries.
You did some research in Chile, didn't you, about how to create the optimal investment in the grid to bring on renewable power. What is the optimal policy here?
I think it's a bit hard to generalize, but Chile provides a nice feel-good example. So Chile is sitting in one of the best spots for solar energy, actually unparalleled in the world. So the Atacama Desert has the best radiation solar potential. And I think what the Chilean government did is basically make the investment public policy priority. So instead of having private investment deploy the grid, which would have never happened, they decided it would be the consumer that would pay for the grid. This could be controversial if consumers are worse off, but for many of these investments, consumers are better off very quickly. So even if you make consumers pay for it, it does bring a large set of benefits. And this is what we find in our project. So I guess in an ideal scenario, you would want to lead publicly these investments and have consumers pay. Obviously, that requires a certain amount of financial stability, political stability that not all countries will have. And Chile, in this sense, is a quite well-functioning country that could make this huge investment with a kind of a good agreement. In other places, that might be a bit harder to pull.
So, Mara, I'm going to make you a policymaker. If you were making the policy to increase the pace of adoption of wind and solar in a low-income country, what would you do?
I would make sure that any outside financing for energy is focused on these technologies. So emphasizing green investment and making sure that these countries don't get locked in other forms of power, that would be not as good. Mm-hmm. So any sort of World Bank funds, IMF funds, any sort of international investment, I do think it should get a plus in these technologies. Additionally, I would try to put a lot of design and development into the process. And as I was mentioning before, try to think what's the best solution for these countries, not how we would do it here for us, because they do have this blank slate of things that they can design. And I think it would be a mistake to just go there and do what we do. So putting human capital, putting resources, putting some R&D into thinking what's best for these countries.
John, if you were tasked with incentivizing innovation in green technologies, what would you do?
It may sound surprising to some listeners that one policy actually is carbon taxes. So by putting a higher price on carbon, which reflects how, you know, the social cost of carbon, not just the kind of, you know, private cost of getting out of the ground, but the fact when you use oil or coal, it also pumps out greenhouse gases, which are, you know, leading to global warming. When you put a higher price on carbon and make energy prices higher, that reduces the use of the dirty non-renewables, the fossil fuels, but that also incentivizes innovation in clean fuels. Because if you think about what do innovators do, what do when you do research development, one of the things you're looking at is, well, how big is the market going to be? So if the market for my product is small, I have much less incentive to do research on it than if the market for my product is really large. Market size is a really big driver of innovation. By having a carbon tax, you reduce the expectations of the market size of fossil fuel, and therefore you help incentivize innovation into clean technologies.
What policy would speed up the diffusion and adoption of these technologies in developing countries? Because we don't really have time to waste, do we?
No, absolutely. So there are lots of ways in which existing technologies can be spread more quickly by different forms of incentives. So, you know, in a very simple example of that, if you think about rooftop solar panels, governments can give incentives for people to do that. They do, in fact, in most countries, give incentives for people to install solar panels on their roofs. They can give incentives for people to drive more electric vehicles and buy more electric vehicles. So there's a whole number of ways in which that speed up of diffusion takes place. And I think in developing countries, that is probably the most important thing. It's less about research and development to generate radical new technologies. It's ways to incentivize, say, Indonesia to build the next power plants to be solar instead of the next power plant to be coal. If the next power plants in lots of countries which are growing, like Indonesia and India, China, are going to be in coal, then that's not a good situation for the world to be in.
Thank you, Ma and John.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Tim.
The BRED IGC course is free, and for more information, download slides or reading lists or even to watch the lectures, go to theigc.org. You'll find all the information there. It's not hard to find. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. The best way to make sure you don't miss an episode is to subscribe on your podcast platform, and our past episodes, as ever, are at voxdev.org.